You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, a literary landmark as a Czech prostitute recalls her life. We sum up the UNESCO impact over 25 years, and later we use some lyrics to improve your Czech. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Petra Hulová is a major figure in contemporary Czech literature. Her latest work, Three Plastic Rooms, is a monologue of a middle-aged prostitute who looks back at her life. David Vaughan reports in this week's edition of Czech Books.
I've come to the Prague district of Smíchov to join Petra in her workplace, which in itself is a rather unusual place for writing.
Yes. And I'm very happy that you are here and that the book has just been published. And yeah.
And just to explain, I mean, in order to get to your little room here, which is on the top floor of a former factory, you have to climb up two ladders and then shut a trap door.
Yeah, well, this small place used to be a photographer's dark room, so it was all covered and there were no windows. It's really very isolated and I feel here as if in some kind of spaceship or something. And I love to work here. It works pretty fine for me.
It actually makes me think of Virginia Woolf's famous essay, A Room of One's Own, this ideal space for being able to write creatively. Is that what you feel in this space?
Yeah, exactly. It depends, I think, what kind of writer you are. There are many writers who prefer to work in their kitchen or in their apartments, but at home I would just get disturbed by dirty dishes and dirty socks and all that mess around. So I love to come here because here I can switch into another mode of being and it just feels very good.
With nothing but the hum of the traffic in the background.
Exactly, yes.
And on the subject of rooms, the title of your book is, in English, Three Plastic Rooms. In a sense, the three plastic rooms are for the narrator of your book, a little bit what this room is for you, the place where she feels secure at home, where she can do her job. The difference is that she's working as a prostitute.
Yes, the narrator works as a prostitute and the book is her monologue. It's not like a sociological or psychological analysis of life of a prostitute as a victim or something. It's more like inner monologue of hers, full of her sexual fantasies and thinking on the matter of gender from a little bit different perspective than we are used to.
And it really is. The whole book is a kind of stream of consciousness, isn't it? And I was wondering, when you were writing the book, did you just think yourself into her? Or did you spend a great deal of time researching, looking at how it would be to be in her position and try in a very systematic way to create in your mind her own mind?
Well, I've been to a couple of brothels before I started to write a book, but it was not really because of the book. I just went there out of curiosity, but it was for me more an occasion to put a certain mask on me in order to switch perspective a little bit and immerse into this stream of consciousness. I wrote the book very quickly. I wrote it, I think, in 2 weeks in St. Petersburg, where I went because I had this idea that I wanted to write in the city of Dostoevsky, quite a funny romantic idea. And I think that this rush, this pace in which the book was created is still there. I think it's pretty energetic, fast stream of consciousness.
Dump out any one of the drawers in my desk and you'll have material lined up like beads on a string. Every scuffed and used little item in there is a story, and a hairpin with a year and a half old fistful of hair could be two, even four, because the human body reeks of intrigue from 100 miles away,
and a story is one long thread of problems. Everyone would get bored otherwise. I enjoy stories of broken hearts too, even if I don't know the people. They're made up, so they aren't instructive. So there's actually no reason to care.
Reading the book, I felt really as though you'd become the narrator. Is that how you felt in those 2 weeks when you were completely absorbed by writing the book?
I often use a first person in my books. I often kind of become the character and imagine being the character. That's the way how I like to work. So yes, I kind of changed myself into her in a way.
It's not the first time you've chosen a character who, by the rules of conventional morality, would be scorned or looked on with suspicion. In a previous novel, you had a narrator who was, I suppose, what you'd call today an unreconstructed communist. Here you've got the prostitute. Do you think that's something that we are bad at doing in our society, at thinking ourselves into the way that another person experiences everything around them?
Writing is a way of communication for me. It's sort of a dialogue with a reader, and I like to push him or her out of her comfort zone a little bit, to disturb and to provoke. So I like to choose a character or become a character as a narrator that is difficult to agree with, but is on the other hand also interesting. It's ambiguous. I mean, ambiguity is very important for me, and this discomfort that I try to make for the reader.
And there are some scenes that are uncomfortable to read. There's a very prominent scene in the book describing a paedophile act where the narrator is imagining this man abusing a child.
She hates men who misuse children, and she leads her, let's say, private fight against them. But at the same time, she is well able to imagine that this can be a very appealing thing. And again, it's disturbing, and you as a reader have to cope with that somehow. And for me as a writer, it's also interesting because it touches certain forbidden zones, it touches certain edges, and that's also what relates to what writing is about and how we use our imagination and what are the borders here, and it's very complex.
The thing that I most loved about the book and reading the book is the language. The way that you have given a whole life to the language of fantasy, of her world within her three rooms, which is immensely rich. The language is full of quirky metaphors and drifts from fairly realistic description to fantasy scenes, which you can really at times laugh out loud at times very disturbing. That seems to me to be what your writing is ultimately all about, isn't it? It's that relishing the wealth of language and experimenting with language.
Language is important for me, but should be for any writer, and it's my tool, but I would say that it's always a tool that carries a meaning and is there to enhance the meaning or be with the, let's say, message of the words in a certain, again, possibly disturbing relationship.
Obviously, there is a provocative element to the novel. Did you find that there was a lot of interest and excitement among Czech readers when the book came out, or was there also a lot of misunderstanding of the book?
Yeah, there were people who liked the book and there are those who don't. What I was kind of disappointed was the reception of the book by literary reviewers, because their reviews were pretty shallow and the positive ones were praising the, let's say, innovative, rich language, and the negative ones were criticizing the fact that there is no clear plot and that the setting is unclear and that it's, let's say, chaotic. but nobody really wrote about the issues of gender or the morality of the book and the problematic part with the pedophile scene, which is pretty strong. Nobody mentioned that really, and that was a disappointment for me.
My moulded plastic three-room suite has no kitchen / living room, no woman preparing instant meals, and no man on the couch thinking who knows what. I won't even try to imagine where they might be and how many of them in their co-alliances and how many times a week they bang and whether they take a hard stand on that or have hard feelings towards each other or if the man ever gets hard anymore, since the woman hardly comes from behind the counter. And though it seems like things around there are hard enough as it is, under the duvet at night, it's hardly hard at all. So, as the creator of the show, I have the right to scratch that when it comes to my TV mystery series.
She has her three plastic rooms, her home, the place where she works, the place where she feels that she's under control. Do you feel that she is really in control of her life? She's doing a job where she's dependent on the goodwill and also on being able to trust the men who are her clients. There's a constant element of danger, there's a constant element of power, there's obviously the transaction, the financial transaction. You talk about the ethical questions around this. Do you feel that she is free in the world that she's living in?
It's difficult to say, and I don't want to generalize. Definitely her, let's say, happiness and wealthy existence is limited by her age and by her aging. She cannot really work as a prostitute until her very old age.
And she's age in and her aging, early 30s, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And aging is also a matter of her concern and one of the topics of the book, the fear of women getting old and stuff like that. So her, let's say, stable and in a way happy existence is definitely limited by aging, that's for sure.
And it's a little obsession of hers, isn't it? The thought of menopausal women sweating profusely and carrying large numbers of spare blouses in their handbags, which is this quirky image that sort of comes into her mind again and again. This is the spectre of her own future, isn't it?
Exactly, and she makes fun of it and she is scared of it at the same time, the same way I am as well and the same way many women are. So I think it's a topic that many women are obsessed with. I was just trying to show it in a funny but straightforward, tough way at the same time.
Petra Hulová, thank you very much indeed for talking to Radio Prague.
Thank you.
And Three Plastic Rooms is published by Yantar Publishing in London in an excellent translation by Alex Zucker.
David Vaughan with that edition of Czech Books. Now, in 1992, Czechs marked their first UNESCO success when Prague, Telč and Kutná Hora were added to the UNESCO list of World Heritage Sites. Today, the Czech Republic has 12 entries on the list and others have been put forward. Ruth Frankova sums up the success so far and the future prospects.
The historic centre of Prague, Telč and Český Krumlov were the first sites in the Czech Republic to become part of the prestigious UNESCO World Heritage Sites back in 1992. In the following years, they were joined by another 9 places, the Pilgrimage Church of St. John of Nepomuk at Zelená Hora, the Lednice Valtice Cultural Landscape, the Gardens and Castle in Kroměříž, the historic village of Holašovice, the Litomyšl Castle, Villa Tugendhat in Brno, and most recently in 2003, the Jewish Quarter in Třebíč. Dita Limová is the head of the UNESCO division in the Department of International Relations of the Culture Ministry.
There are currently over 1,000 items on the UNESCO World Heritage Site list, and the Czech Republic has 12 entries. In terms of the number of items and the country's size, we are among the top 25 countries, so I would say we're doing really well.
The Czech Republic recently submitted several nominations to the UNESCO committee, but as Ms. Limová points out, the approval process has proven to be increasingly more complicated. With the number of UNESCO sites gradually increasing, it is not easy to find something really unique. Nowadays, industrial monuments, for instance, are more likely to be added than historical city centres. Ms. Limová believes this makes the Czech nomination of Žatec, a hop-growing town in North Bohemia, a likely candidate to succeed.
I would say that Žatec is currently our closest candidate for victory. The nomination concerns the unique architectural monuments linked to the processing of hops. We submitted the proposal in January of this year. Žatec is an example of architectural heritage linked to a specific industry. We hope we can succeed, since there aren't many similar items on the list, and there is definitely none linked to hops.
Another Czech nomination for UNESCO listing, which will be officially submitted in January next year, is the National Stud Farm in Kladruby in central Bohemia. Founded in 1579, the farm is known for its Kladruby horses, one of the oldest breeds in the world. The nomination aims to establish the Kladruby landscape, including the stud farm, grazing land, forests, and everything else related to horse breeding, as a unique site in Europe. The Czech Republic is also cooperating with other European countries, working on joint nomination projects, as Dita Limová outlines.
Another nomination is the mining region of Krušnohoří. It is a joint project with our colleagues from Saxony. That will be submitted in January. And then there is the Town Spars project, a joint project of 7 European countries. There are altogether 11 towns, and for the Czech Republic it is Karlovy Vary, Mariánské Lázně and Františkovy Lázně. So in this case, the preparation process is quite complicated, and we still need some time to prepare the ground.
As Dita Limová points out, the listing as a UNESCO heritage site is not the end, but rather a beginning of a long process. The UNESCO department has to make sure the site is maintained for future generation, but it also has to deal with controversies such as the skyline of Prague's historical core or the revolving stage in Český Krumlov.
It is a very delicate topic. Each of these monuments was listed because of some unique value that needs to be protected. The revolving stage in Český Krumlov definitely has its supporters, but unfortunately it stands in the middle of Baroque gardens and doesn't really fit in the setting. So we have to find some solution that can benefit both parties. As far as Prague is concerned, it is difficult to protect the historical centre and at the same time enable the capital to develop and keep the inflow of tourists at a reasonable level. So it is a complicated situation and we're under a lot of pressure, but we hope that Prague will find a way to solve it.
Besides valuable historical sites, the Czech Republic also has a large number of items on the UNESCO list of intangible cultural monuments, including the puppeteering tradition, Slovácký verbuňk dance, Hlinecko region carnival processions and masks, and the South Bohemian Ride of the Kings. There are also a number of Czech representatives on the UNESCO Memory of the World Register. Its International Advisory Committee recently recommended the enlistment of the Leos Janáček Archive, a documentary fund including the heritage of one of the world's greatest 20th century composer. Another candidate is the Great Siege of Malta map by Giovanni Francesco Camocchio from the second half of the 16th century, which was discovered at the Charles University map collection in Prague. And finally, the Kincvar daguerreotype made by Louis Daguerre in 1839 and donated to Austrian Chancellor Metternich.
Ruud Frankova there, summing up the Czech experience of UNESCO listing. And now we look to improve your Czech skills with some lyrics.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo, a bylo by to znamení, že se nebe zlobilo.
Welcome to another edition of Soundcheck, Radio Prague's Czech language crash course, in which you can learn new idioms with the help of song lyrics. Today's song, sung by Václav Neckář and Helena Vondráčková, is from a popular Czech fairy tale and is called Kdyby na sůl nebylo, if we couldn't even afford salt.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo, a mráz nám spálil osení, a peklo by si vylilo zlost.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo is a Czech idiom that means something will happen come hell or high water. In other words, no matter how hard things get. Directly, it translates as even if we don't have the money to buy salt. Kdyby na sůl nebylo, tohle musím mít. I have to have this even if we can't afford salt. Other related idioms are kdyby padali trakaře, meaning that something will come about even if wheelbarrows were to start falling from the sky.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo, a bylo by to znamení, že se nebe zlobilo.
Another quaint and somewhat old-fashioned expression with the same meaning is kdyby čert na koze jezdil. In other words, something is certain to happen even if the devil were to ride a goat. Toto prosadím, kdyby čert na koze jezdil, means I'll see this through even if the devil were to ride a goat.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo, a mráz nám spálil osení, a peklo by si vylilo.
More commonplace ways of saying the same thing are ať se děje, co se děje, which is the Czech expression for come what may, stůj, co stůj, cost what it may, or za každou cenu, at any price. There are also a number of slang expressions denoting certainty that something will happen. To si piš, which translates directly as make a note of that, or to je tutovka, that's a sure thing. Stopro, an abbreviation for 100%, also means that you can count on something coming about or someone keeping their promise.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo, a mráz nám spálil osení, a peklo by si vylilo zlost.
And finally, there are one or two phrases you can use when you're sure that something doesn't stand a chance of happening. For instance, nezhubnu, I kdybych se rozkrájela. I can't lose weight even if I were to cut myself into pieces. Or nezhubnu, I kdybych se postavila na hlavu. I can't lose weight even if I were to stand on my head.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo, a mráz nám spálil osení, a peklo by si vylilo zlost na nás.
Well, the one you want to keep in mind is naučím se česky, i kdyby trakaře padaly. I will learn Czech even if wheelbarrows were to start falling from the sky. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for learning Czech with me and naschledanou.
Kdyby na sůl nebylo, a mráz nám spálil osení, a peklo by si vylilo zlost na nás.
to věda.
And that's presented to you by Daniela Lazarova. And that sums up our offering today. I'm Chris Johnston. Thanks very much for joining us and have a good weekend.